Hello there. Welcome to the first episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show for 2014 and the 54th episode of the show overall. I'm Temma Frank, your host. I'm off to a super fast start, both on the web and offline. On the web, it's today's episode with the super fast business podcast host, James Schramko. I'll tell you more about him in a minute. And offline, I'm quite excited to be heading off to my very first time at the New Media Expo, what used to be called Blog World, in Las Vegas. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And in the podcasts I'll be doing when I come back, I'm sure there will be a few references to that and some of the things that I learned there and the people that I met there. Also, if you end up not having time to listen through to the absolute end of today's podcast, I just want to give you a heads up that next week, on January 10th, I'll also be releasing my interview with Jay Baer of Convince and Convert and the Social Pros podcast. So that and today's podcast are both really worth listening to. As for today, a little bit of background about James Schramko. He is Australian, so you'll get the fun of listening to that accent. And in fact, he makes the comment at one point in the interview that the accent actually can be kind of beneficial because it helps people remember him. He also claims that we Canadians say a boot, and I don't know where that comes from. I say about, but anyway. Personally, I tend to like podcasts that are kind of meaty and at least a half hour to an hour long. That's just the sort of person I am. I put it on, let's say, when I'm going somewhere in the car or when I should be falling asleep at night, and I just kind of like to have that length and that depth. But James Schramko's podcast is an exception for me. I really think it's a great little podcast. It's short and sweet and totally practical, just a few minutes. He even posts the timing of what little nugget of wisdom you get at what minute in the podcast. There's a lot to learn from what he does. He's a really smart guy. He also runs a web development firm and an increasing empire that is totally run virtually. In today's interview, he talks about a whole bunch of interesting things, including the importance of having a really good system, and particularly a system for syndicating or spreading your content across the web. And he also reveals the most common mistake that he sees small businesses making when it comes to internet marketing. So enjoy the interview, and I will chat with you briefly afterward. Why don't you start with just a quick overview of the various ventures that you are involved in?
Sure. So superfastbusiness.com is the masthead brand where I found it easier to communicate all of my brands under that one place. But primarily I have two sides to the business. One is business coaching, where I have an internet business community called Fast Web Formula and a mastermind called Silver Circle. And on the other side, we have business services, primarily online stuff like website development and search engine optimization services.
So how do you manage your time? Like, you seem to be doing so many things at once. How do you do it all?
Well, it's a matter of having a team and a routine. So, it comes with a lot of practice. I've managed teams for a long time, since probably 1997 I started managing team members. I really? Sort of inherited one apprentice, and I had to create a training schedule for him, and then I rolled into a small team of two, and then 10, and then 20, and then eventually I was running a business, 73 people. And, you just get better and better at it, like a juggler, adding an extra ball here or there. But there is a limit. So each time I grow the business, I have management structures in place to handle the team members and to keep it all effective. So really, with the two sides of the business, one side of it is primarily just me organizing things in a very effective structure and a system and a routine. And the other side of it is the team, and that's run by a team of managers who I communicate with pretty much every day, but in a structured way.
Now, your team, my understanding is that it's at least partially a virtual team. They're not all there with you.
It's just me here. There's nobody else. And that's the way I like it. They're not even in the same country.
So how have you managed that? How did you find reliable people?
Using the same skills. It's just deciding what sort of attitude that hire, being very clear on expectations, and then creating a values-based leadership style where we talk about what it means to work in our business so that we can easily identify who should be attracted to the business, what sort of codec is appropriate for the way that we do our business, and that's a good means to evaluate performance and to see if someone's a good fit for us. And we've been pretty lucky out of all of our hires. We've only ever had one or two people who don't fit in, and it's very obvious to them and to us, so it's easy to make decisions around that.
Can you elaborate? You said some sort of a codec. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
Yes, so I learned about a values-based leadership system, and that is identifying with the team what are some of the core attributes of the business. And, you know, like with Google, they have googliness, whatever that is. With our business, one of our core values is we have to be ninja good. And without having to create chapters and a lot of text-based procedure manuals on that, what that means is if you work in our business, we expect that you're going to be quite good at what you do. So if you're a web developer, we expect you to keep up with your craft, to learn about CSS and PHP and hosting environments, et cetera. So that means, and it actually implies that you should stay current, that you should read information, stay up with the articles, do training, nominate yourself for training, buy books on Amazon that are going to develop your skill sets, and then implement that in the workplace. So that value dictates that we have to be good, and it applies for me too, the leader of the operation. If I'm going to make audios or videos, which is one of my primary roles, then I have to get better at it. I've got to be good at it. I've got to have learn about the equipment and the craft and the lighting and the sound and the rendering and the composition and the director's eye and all these things that I have to develop. Otherwise, I'm not adhering to the core value of being good, being ninja good.
So the people, one of the challenges that I hear most often, particularly from small businesses, is how the heck do they identify somebody who has the right talents to do, for instance, a website for them, the programming, if they themselves know nothing about programming? What advice would you offer in terms of how to choose the right kind of company to do the work for you?
For most small businesses, they should be hiring a specialist service who just does that thing, and not trying to hire someone in-house. Unless you want to be a web development firm, or unless you are a prolific publisher with enough sales turnover to justify in-house web development staff, you really probably just hire a specialist service team like ours at ATL Web.
But how do they know that they're any good? I mean, how can they figure that out? Or if they've even...
Same way they hire a plumber or an electrician or word of mouth, who have their friends dealt with? Do they like the look and the feel of the website? Is there a phone number there? Do they want to speak to the people? Have they see a portfolio of prior work? Do they feel that it looks and smells and feels as though it's a trustworthy organization? Is it transparent? Can you see the details of the owner of the site? What's the reputation of the business online? You know, like almost all of our business comes from people who already know us or know of us or have been referred to us because we do good work. And over time, you build a body of work. And if you look after people, they come back. And that's been one of the secrets to our business is dealing with the same people over and over again. And if we look at our monthly invoices, probably 80% plus are people we already know.
Right. Okay. And are they mostly people in your geographic area or are they all over?
We're a global company. So we have customers in North America and Europe, in Australasia, Asia. Basically, I've traveled most places in the world now and opened up these markets. I might have met someone face to face at an event in Los Angeles or Washington, D.C. or London. And then these people have a high level of trust and then they start buying. And then with the online communities, it's very easy to access a global community, especially with groups on Facebook. Things like LinkedIn for your average small business owner might be quite useful. And, of course, your own website, which really should be your calling card or your business front door. That's where you can make a big impact and you can perpetuate that by yourself. You actually have the ability to be your own publisher more so than at any other time in history. You can publish your own radio show. You can publish your own a video show. You can publish news or print text.
Do you think that your podcast or your videos, like, what are the elements that you think have propelled you to fame, I guess, so quickly? Because you do seem to have grown very quickly.
It seems quick, but it's been about 8 years.
It's like the overnight successes.
I might have just popped into your consciousness, but the chances are when you find out about me, you're going to see me in a lot of places because I have a pretty good syndication set up. And that's through a constant process of refinement. But podcasting is absolutely the most powerful format that you could embrace because everyone has one of these. Everybody has a smartphone. They have the ability to put your content in their pocket, and they will especially be listening to it where they cannot consume other media. They can listen to it when they're in the train, when they're walking the dog, when they're at the gym working out, when they're on an aeroplane. You know, you can listen to podcasts in most places where you can't read or watch a video. So it's a very accessible medium. It's a high resonance because, you know, you can hear the voice, the tonality, the passion, the sincerity coming through in the voice tone. Whereas with text, it's a little harder to interpret that. So people get to know your personality. And chances are also what I've found is if someone jumps onto a podcast and they like it, they're going to go and listen to more episodes. They're going to subscribe. They're going to go back and listen way back. And you know, if they're really interested, they'll dig around to your early episodes to see how crap you were. They'll watch the journey unfold. And, you know, I've got audio stuff out there from maybe 5 or 6 years ago, which are terrible. Same with my old videos. But it's part of what people actually like. They like the genuine journey. They like the story. They like to see reality. That's why reality shows are so popular. That is why people resist very cheesy and contrived advertisements these days because they want more reality.
Yeah. I think you see that with particularly with somebody like Pat Flynn, the Smart Passive Income, where he's been totally open door about what he's been trying to do. And I think that's a lot of what drew people to him as well.
Well, it's definitely his shtick, but make no mistake, he rehearses the crap out of his presentations and stuff, and he carefully scripts and curates behind the scenes. Like, even Pat Flynn he's putting out into the marketplace the perception of Pat Flynn that he wants to, and it's deliberately crafted. So, you know, that it would be a mistake to think it's off the cuff with Pat Flynn because, you know, I know, and having spoken to him on my show, he really puts a lot of work into production values and the performance. So,
interesting.
You know, that's a great example, though, of anyone can do that. You can put in the hours. He'll tell you if he was going to present at an event, he will do a lot of training on presenting. He'll spend hours and hours rehearsing and getting it just right so that it can be a perfect delivery. Whereas there are other people like me, I'm a little more off the cuff. Pretty much everything I do is unscripted and in real time, but that is the way that I operate. So I would say that I'm even more sincere with my delivery because what's coming out of my mouth is like instantaneous, and people really resonate with that. They love the rawness of it. Most people, not everybody though.
Well, it all depends what you say, I guess.
If I did rehearse and practice and script and, you know, maybe we could ring up an hour before the podcast and go through all the questions and make sure it's all tight. But somehow I don't think everybody wants that. I think some people like it real.
Yeah, absolutely. You commented that you syndicate your content in ways so that it shows up all over the place. Can you elaborate a little bit on how you do that?
Yeah, so it started with this huge project my team and I did. They went out and I just basically said, go and explore every corner of the internet. Where can we put content? What channels can we use? What systems? We did everything, press releases, RSS syndication, bookmarking, podcasting, videos, blog posts, everything you could think of, even software submissions and toolbars. The thing is, some places have a higher impact than others, and we track tested and measured all of this, and then we refined it down to the main ones, which is something that I teach on my site. I give away the whole course. It's called Own the Race Course, but that is the core things that I do. So I would take a video, and then I would put it onto YouTube, but I'd also broadcast it from my website. I would get the audio from that and put it onto my site, which is also syndicated to iTunes and to Stitcher.
Yeah, I love Stitcher. Yeah.
And maybe even Podbean. And these days you can also use SoundCloud, I think it is. So there's a few places you can put that audio that get a high impact. And then, of course, you want to do the major ones, which is Facebook, Google+, Pinterest, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you can hit those spots whenever you publish a piece of content, then you're going to get in front of most people.
How much do you customize the way in which you're posting it on each of those different locations? Or do you just use something like Buffer and have it one?
I don't use a tool for that. I do it by hand. So
really?
The team will put my content on my website. And so now I have a post. And on the post, you've got those little chicklets that you can click on that take you off to the site. And that generally will pull the picture from the post, which we do. We customize every single post. We have a picture. And I will actually write a different message on my personal Facebook, my business Facebook, my Twitter. I'll use the click to retweet function that my team put there, which they put a bit of thought into what's sort of a handy thing to have going out onto Twitter. For Pinterest, I'll put a comment relating to the image. Google+, I'll put something that's more relevant to my audience there. And then I basically sit back and start answering comments on my Discuss widget.
That's interesting that you do it all individually. I've noticed I'm starting to get to spend a little bit more time in Google+. And, of course, now there's Google+ business pages as well as personal pages. What are your thoughts on using a business page versus a personal page for a business like yours or mine?
Well, I think for mine, I've got a business page on Facebook because I want to keep the businessy stuff away from my personal stuff. I have actually maxed out my friends anyway. I've hit that 5,000 limit. But the thing is, I travel so much and I meet so many people. Like, I can go to one event, like a Traffic and Conversion Summit, and there's 1,700 people there. I literally can make hundreds of connections with real people there. So, you know, we're in a strange bucket. I don't spend a lot of time on Google+. I only participate in it because it's Google. I think it's good for SEO. I think that they're forcing you to use it, even though there's huge backlash about them making you do it for YouTube. I just think it's something that it's worth paying attention to. I mean, I just had my Hangout feature enabled yesterday. Like, I'm not really pushing the envelope there in terms of embracing that. I had a good look at it when it came out, which was seems quite a long time ago now. Maybe it was a year or two ago.
Yeah.
When it first came out, it looked interesting, but, you know, the measure for me is no one in the street knows anything about it. If you go down and buy a coffee, or you catch a taxi, or you ask a kid or a neighbor, they're going to say, Google what? Like, it's just, it's not important yet to the rest of the world. It's not a Facebook. It's not a Twitter.
Right. Now, in terms of search engine optimization, which I know is something that your team works on as well, Google is also throwing a wrench into that with no longer letting people see the keywords that people are using to search for them. Can you comment a little bit on that and what you think are now the best ways to handle search engine optimization? I mean, obviously producing lots of good content, but beyond that, how do you deal with the lack of keyword knowledge now?
Well, I haven't really been using keywords the same way that other people talk about it for at least 3 or 4 years, so it's really not going to be a problem for me. What you should be doing is optimizing for a human, for a customer, and hitting their pain points, and especially things like frequently asked questions. Almost all of our posts, well before Hummingbird was released, have how-to. If you go and look at my site and type in how-to or versus, you're going to find a lot of searches. One thing we optimize for is I actually go through my Google Analytics. It emails me every week. It emails the team every week a list of every single search phrase that arrived on our site that uses a phrase like how to or versus. And then we know what people are actually finding our site for. And we start optimizing our tags and our content and our descriptions for those phrases. And then I'll create new posts around those topics. So one of the best things you can do is look at your own Google Analytics, and you could use a tool like Hittail, but you could also use Google's own analytics report and start pulling out phrases that it gets found for. There are still other tools out there like Ahrefs or SEMrush that will mm-hmm. show you keyword data, but it's not it's not the end of the world. Really, what Google wants is a high-quality result for someone when they're searching for your site. So even on a basic level, if you went to Google and you typed phrases that you know your customers are talking about and you go down to the bottom of the page and have a look at the related searches results, if you made mm-hmm. an article on each one of those, if they're relevant for your market, you can't miss.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So what do you see as being the biggest mistakes that your clients typically make before you set them straight?
There's so many.
Okay. Are there any that are pretty...
making mistakes, and a lot of them make huge mistakes.
Okay, but are there any ones that you see pretty commonly?
Well, most people are looking way too small, like myopic. They're just looking at the minutiae and getting bogged down with installing crap on their computer that they're never going to use, or just tiny little tactics instead of looking at a bigger strategy. You know, like if you want to rank on the first page of Google today, you can. You could go and do it probably by this afternoon. You just go and buy whatever site's in the position number one. Like that's a big thinking thing. Most people aren't thinking big. They're thinking tiny. So that's mm-hmm. the biggest mistake I see people make is they're messing around on little small fry stuff and they're not looking at the bigger picture. If they mm-hmm. simply thought about what result do they want and what's the shortest path to get there with integrity without taking compromises or doing things that jeopardize you, then you should be able to forge a path there. Like really, if you wanted to start up or a real initiative and get some super traction, go and find out the hot points in your marketplace, put some effort mm-hmm. into creating something that solves that, and then put it in the path of the right people, and it will all take off for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a question that's a little bit different here. I mean, I'm based in Canada. You're in Australia?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. We both one of the things that I found interesting is maybe it's just because I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I keep hearing these Australian voices, not so many Canadian voices. In Canada, retailers have been very, very slow to get on the e-commerce bandwagon, to start really doing things. Do you have any sense of whether what that's like in your country and why I do hear so many Australian voices?
You hear a lot of Australian voices because we're innovative and we're more outside looking than some other cultures because we're so far away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, traditionally the Mecca has been that North American region. You know, it's a lot of people. They were pretty much invented the internet, I think, or certainly pushed it hard in the beginning.
The U.S. Yeah.
But there's some things the U.S. market don't realize, and that is like things like telephony. The American market is way behind on stuff like that, like decades behind. Mm-hmm. We had digital telephones in Australia in 1992.
Really?
Yeah, America hung on to the analog network for a long time because they had legacy infrastructure. And so, you know, we're very, very innovative with other stuff like other technologies. Generally, we're in the top few countries behind places like Germany and mm-hmm. Norway and stuff for adapting to new technology. Mm-hmm. So we're always fairly early at the party when there's new things going on. Google invented their Wave thing in the Google Australia head office. But let's not talk about Wave or Buzz or all the other flops they had on the way to Google Plus.
Yep.
You know, I think we're at more outside looking. We have more cultural infusion here. We probably have, I'd say, the second most multicultural environment on the planet after perhaps New Zealand per head of capita.
Really?
So we get an infusion of everything from outside, and then we mm-hmm. we just take it out to the world. Like for most things, we're about 2% of the America or the world, right? So, you know, car production or whatever else. But for internet marketing, I'd say we have a much higher representation because we travel, because we are innovative, and also, luckily, for some reason, and I'm not sure why, maybe because we have some Hollywood actors like Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe or whatever, but he's a New Zealander. Maybe some people have sort of given us a good reputation in other countries. I think most countries like Australians, and it's interesting and it's differentiated from the 200 and whatever, 300 million US voices out there. It gives us a little bit of cut through. I think we're able to stand out more. I certainly, when I go to America to an event, all of the people there know me and remember me from before, maybe just because we sound different.
Maybe. Yeah, the Canadian accent is just too neutral, I think.
Well, it's easy to flush out the Canadian. You just get them to say about.
You know, I don't know where people get that from. I don't say about in any weird way. I've heard other people say that. I don't hear Canadians saying that. So I don't know where that comes from.
What a Canadian a mile off. The worst thing you can ever do is call a Canadian an American.
Oh, yeah. That for sure. Absolutely. Well, and I got to say right now, I'd love to trade places with you because I look out my office window and there's about a foot of snow out there. So
I'm looking out my office window and there's about 4 foot of surf.
Oh, you're making me envious. Any final thoughts or suggestions or comments for small or mid-sized businesses that are thinking of getting into e-commerce or online marketing a little more seriously? I mean, it's a huge topic, obviously.
Some of the stats here show that half the businesses still don't even have a website. So
yeah,
for a lot of small businesses, it's very overwhelming. They're quite busy doing what they're doing, whatever that is, whether it's pulling possums out of roofs or fixing washing machines. You know, the last thing they want to know about is the internet and techie stuff. It's all expensive and confusing, and there's a lot of rip-off agents out there. I would say just start small. Even though I was talking about thinking big is being aware that you really should participate online if you're in most sort of businesses, even if it's to take back some control from companies like the Yellow Pages or these big companies who want to take your money to do your marketing for you. A lot of them will waste most of your budget and you may not get a good return. So if you want to take some responsibility for your own marketing destiny, it's good to start thinking about building your own online presence, and you can go about it in a nice, slow and steady fashion. You know, there are companies like mine who provide wholesale services to people who sell to local businesses. So, you know, if they wanted to halve the cost of getting a website, they could go direct to a site like mine. They could deal with a team who has built, you know, 3,000 websites, not some shady corner operation who just decided they're going to get rich on the internet and start selling websites last week, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Do your due diligence like you would with anything else, but start that journey because it will have a big payoff. It certainly has for me. And as we were saying, it's been 8 years now, my journey, and it's turned into something amazing and wonderful, but it was very hard in the beginning, and most things are difficult before they're easy, right?
One thing I took away from today's episode, and it's really consistent with what Gary Vaynerchuk is saying in his new book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, and that is that you really need to handcraft your messages to each platform, each social media platform. Sadly, it's no longer really good enough to use a platform like Buffer, which I adore, to blast out the same message to a whole bunch of social media at once. And it's something that I really struggle with because on the one hand, I want to send out a lot of content, and who really has time to craft messages for each? But I think at very least for the messages that relate to my own content, it is worth taking the extra time to craft special messages. And I liked some of James' ideas for what to focus on for the different platforms. Next week, we'll be featuring my interview with Jay Baer of Convince and Convert and the Social Pros podcast. That is another of my favorite podcasts and one I'd really recommend that you listen to. And I'm sure you will enjoy that interview too. In the meantime, if you've got any feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, I would really value hearing them. You can email me, Tema, T-E-M as in mother A, at frankonlinemarketing.com, or you can head on over to the website and leave feedback there. And of course, I would super value it if you would be willing to provide feedback on iTunes or Stitcher. If you haven't explored Stitcher yet, I personally have been using it for over a year now, and I absolutely love it. I find it a lot easier to work with than iTunes. Sorry, Apple. So you might want to check that out if you haven't yet. It's a great way if you're starting to explore podcasts. That's all for now from me, Tema Frank, and I will chat with you next week. Bye.